these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
Well, we're on fire. Back-to-back weeks. I wasn't here 2 weeks ago, but back-to-back weeks that the Killer Bees have made money in BZ Money. Now, the overall results,
we don't need to talk about that,
aren't great. We have to be honest with the listeners. $755 is our budget. $1,000 Mr. Gow gave us of Mr. Gow's money. So we've made a comeback a little bit. We've only lost $245 of Mr. Gow's money, so still not terrible. But we're on our way back. I still am bitter that you guys didn't let me bet $100 last week on the Titans. We lost some money there, some opportunity cost. But where do you want to start today, Blankers? What's your number one?
I mean, honestly, to me, I'll save the best for last, maybe. But I think as much as I can't stand the Vikings for obvious reasons, the Vikings are playing really good football right now. They're at Washington. Washington with Tyler Heinicke.
Yeah, I call him Heineken.
Yeah, okay. You can grab one if you'd like. I'm not sure what he's grabbing, but a home team that's only giving a team as good as the Vikings, they're only getting 3 points. I don't think that's nearly enough. I think Minnesota at Washington, to me, seems like a no-brainer to go with the Vikings, because as much as I want them to slip up, I don't think it's going to be this week in this situation. Cook is running the football well. I mean, Kirk Cousins made a couple of really, really good throws when they needed them in the last couple weeks, in particular last week. I like the Vikings here to win easily at Washington.
Honestly, this was my favorite game of the week. I don't love this week, if I'm being completely honest, so think of that if you're trying to tell the Killer Bees. This was the one game I liked the most. I know it's on the road. I don't think the football team's playing like inspired football, but I think this is a huge talent game where Minnesota just rolls over the football team. How do you feel about this one, Brendan?
I'm with you in hating this week. I don't like this game either. To be honest with you, I lean Washington football team. I want to present something I think will be an overarching theme the rest of the way, and that is what I would call NFC good. I think a lot of these NFC teams, if not all of them, are being lifted up in their records by the fact that the entire NFC sucks. I don't actually think Minnesota is all that good. I don't think Washington's good either.
Yeah.
But I don't think the gap is that significant. At home, I'm not comfortable giving the points to Minnesota. I'm not.
What was the logic you said?
I'm sorry, not giving the points.
You
only
said
getting
NFC
three.
Good?
NFC good. I think.
What conference does the football team play in?
Yeah, NFC.
Yeah, but how is one team gaining an advantage over the other when they're both NFC teams? It's a common denominator.
I am telling you that the Minnesota Vikings have been fake good. We look at Washington as a bad football team. That is just how we view them. We view Minnesota as a good football team. I'm telling you, they're not a good football team.
See,
they are NFC good. If the Vikings were playing in the AFC, their record would not be anything impressive, and we would not be picking them. We wouldn't even be looking at them in this game.
First of all, there's a big difference between picking them in a game and picking them to win the NFC or be one of the top teams in the NFC. I think for right now and the way they've got, you know, you play the schedule you're given. They've done good with the schedule they've been given. I'm picking them to win this football game. I saw Washington play at home. Green Bay was dominant early and then completely crapped themselves. I think that, you know, there's, like I said, it's two conversations. I'm not trying to tell you they're going to win the NFC, but I think they're going to win this football game by more than 3 points.
My hesitance.
We're going to outvote them.
My hesitance is giving the points.
How much you want to go?
I do think that we should value Brendan's opinion. Yeah. So, like, I think it should diminish the overall dollar bet, but I still feel comfortable betting Minnesota. Maybe we go a quarter on the Vikings.
I was going to say 20 or 25. That's fine.
So let's go a quarter on the Vikings, the first bet of BZ Money. First game that I want to sell you on, you stole Minnesota for me, is I think Brendan just said NFC good. Like, there's one thing of NFC good. How about AFC bad? How about just bad in general? I think this is a game between a couple of really poor teams that are playing worse than the talent on their teams. Las Vegas and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think both of these teams have been huge disappointments this year. That said, I think they're equally bad. Jacksonville, they're at home. They're at home this week, and they're the dogs in this game. I think Jacksonville is going to win this game outright. Give me the home dog between a couple of bad teams. Give me the 1.5, and give me the Jags.
Brendan, he's going to need you, because I looked at this game, and the first thing I thought about was, I don't disagree with you that they're both bad teams. I just feel like there's more talent on Las Vegas, and I think that there's more pressure on Las Vegas. And for that reason, I think that this is a game
good,
that
the pressure?
I think they're going to get right. And I think that when a home team's, you know, only the home team is only plus 1.5. I look at that and I'm like, for me, the first thing I thought about was Vegas is going to win this game, and I think they're going to win this game by a field goal or more. So that's, Brendan, that's why I said you're going to have to decide this one.
So I hate the whole week, but this is a game I considered as well. I agree with Jeremy's premise that both of these teams have underperformed, but why? Well, Jacksonville, I think, has underperformed to some extent because they're a team relying on a lot of young pieces. At times, sure, Jacksonville looks pretty good. At other times, they don't. I think Las Vegas has more talent. Why are they underperforming? I don't know. I don't expect them to get it right all season.
Josh McDaniels?
That is weird.
The obvious reason.
Derek Carr?
Derek Carr's been good at times.
Not this year.
Not this year.
He's regressed under McDaniels.
I'm with Jeremy because I don't think Vegas is getting it right this year.
So you guys both want to go
Jacksonville? I'm happy to make this bet.
Let's do it. Let's go a quarter.
Another quarter?
Yeah, let's go a quarter on the Jags. Getting the 1.5 at home. All right, Brendan, what's your first sell?
The only game I like this year, this week, Baltimore at New Orleans, only giving 2.5. I get to avoid the field goal mark. If they win by 3, I'm good. Baltimore is real good. New Orleans is bad. This one, 2.5, not even close.
But is Baltimore AFC good and New Orleans NFC bad?
Baltimore is Super Bowl contender good, and New Orleans can only win games against, wins against the Raiders, the Falcons, and I don't know their third win. But they haven't, what are they, they're 3-5 with bad wins?
This was a game that I actually, if I could have picked any two on the slate, I would have picked Minnesota and Baltimore. So I agree with Brendan here. Baltimore, I think Baltimore's underachieved to this point, be very, very honest.
And
their record's not as good as their team. They have, but I think that there's still like meat on that bone. I think that their upside is still, like, they haven't reached that upside yet. They've shown flashes of it, but their record should be better than they actually are. The Saints, I agree with you. I think they're a mediocre team. They're still playing Andy Dalton at quarterback. I'm not a big fan of the Saints this year. I'm a fan of the Ravens, even though their record hasn't been as good as it should be. I like this one as well, Brendan.
And they're adding guys as well. Baltimore's getting better on defense. They're adding veterans. They're trying to kind of stack a defense full of veterans, like has always been one of their signatures and staples. I agree with you guys. I look at this game, and from the get-go, I thought Baltimore's going to win this game. I don't know how New Orleans put up 24 points and did what they did in Las Vegas was really bad, but I definitely think that Baltimore has got more than enough to cover this one easily.
And it's a Monday night game. We can
Monday night sweat it.
Let's go Fitty. Y'all want to go Fitty?
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's
50 on the Baltimore Ravens. Tyus Bowser's back, by the way. Go Cougs. All right, Blankers, what's your second game?
My second game is the one that we had to get into here because we've got a Lions fan and a Packer fan. It's Green Bay at Detroit. Detroit can't stop anybody. I think Detroit's offense is fairly impressive for what they started to build and put together. I think the Packers know now that they're not going out and getting help at wide receiver. I think that, you know, they're going to find a way to do what they need to do to score enough points and also to stop Detroit. They're going to load up the box. They're going to try and stop the run. They're going to make Jared Goff try and beat them. Their secondary is good enough to stick with the Detroit wide receivers. I think the Packers are going to win by more than 3.5.
Goff has beaten people. He's been pretty good through the air this year. Detroit's defense is really bad, but Green Bay's offense is equally bad, and they couldn't score on their own shadow. They've been awful this year. I have this one as a no play. I don't want either side of it, so I'll leave you two to the Lion Honk and the Packer Honk to fight it out.
Well, this is frustrating because I think we need to play this game. But so, do you guys want my head or my gut?
Can I pass on both? Yeah.
Here's the thing. All the logic in the world tells me the Lions are going to lose this game. DeAndre Swift is pretend healthy. He's missing practice again. Only played half the snaps last week. I think actually slightly under. The offense is different when he's on the field. And he'll be on the field, but not consistently. So my head tells me Packers. That being said, narrative game. Brendan Riley returns to Detroit to watch the Lions beat the Packers.
It's the Brendan Riley revenge game. Now, I'm going to go with your head. Blankers is usually really honest about his team. You've kind of been indifferent, but I'll trust your head more than your gut. Yeah, let's go Green Bay. Let's go Green Bay, giving up the 3.5 on the road, but I don't want to put much on
it.
In fact, I wanted to make it our lowest
20,
monetary bet of the week. Let's go, 10 bucks. What's the point?
Right.
Let's go 20. Let's go $20 on Green Bay, giving up the 3.5 on the road in Detroit. But it's still our lowest. All right, here's the second game I want to sell you on, and I'm not going to sell it very hard because I don't like any of these games this week. But I think Tennessee is going to play awful this week. Malik Willis was dreadful last week. They threw the ball one time in the second half against the Texans. Ryan Tannehill has not been practicing. I believe Malik Willis is going to play again at Arrowhead Stadium, much different than NRG Stadium. The Chiefs aren't known for their defense, but it's better than the Texans' defense, and Kansas City has an offense. Kansas City gets up early in this game, forces Malik Willis to throw the football. It's a massive number. KC's given up 12.5 at home, but they cover the 12.5 as they blow the Titans out of Arrowhead.
I hate that number.
It's a big number.
It's a big number.
We've done bad with those numbers, too.
Yeah, we have. I'm going to let you guys fight it out. I don't like it.
I'm not going to fight it hard.
I would stay away from it.
So I looked at this game early on. Actually, the other way was my initial thought.
Ooh.
As I looked into it a little bit more, I ended up in the same place as you. If I were to go either way, it would be Kansas City. The one thing that worries me about 12.5 is the way that Tennessee plays. Because if they don't go up early, it's going to be hard to go up late. Like, it could be a very quick game.
Yep. They're going to try and do what they did to the Texans, only it's a different defense, but they're going to ball control, eat up time.
But they can't do that if they're down two possessions in the first half.
That's true.
I don't like it.
Blankers
doesn't seem like he likes it. And Brendan, you've been
yeah, we can sit it out.
Kind of on both sides of this one. Yeah, let's not play this one. Brendan, what's your second?
So I really, truly don't have another game that I want to play. This is what I'm going to go with. Seattle at Arizona getting 2 points. Seattle's winning the division. I happen to believe that Geno Smith, what we're seeing, I don't want to say he's, I don't know. I think Geno Smith in Seattle can be the starter for the next few years. That is how good. I think he's going to give them a chance to win games. Arizona not been super impressive. Obviously better with DeAndre Hopkins back. I think this game is a coin toss.
Yeah.
I don't want to bet it.
I'm with you.
I think it's fool's gold.
Am I allowed to present a game and say I don't want to bet it?
I just did with Kansas City.
I don't believe in Geno Smith. I think that's fool's gold. I don't believe in Seattle. I don't care. I don't know how the hell they're in first place. I think that, in a lot of ways, is fool's gold as the division's going to play out. And on the road, I think it's a different environment for them, and it's tougher, way tougher for them because of the home field advantage that they have. I would bet, if I'm going to go either way, I think Arizona covers, and they're going to start to get right and make a statement that they're not out of the division.
Seattle won't win the division, but I'll tell you what, right now I might pick them second to San Francisco.
You think they're going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. In the NFC, I do.
Oh, my goodness, I don't.
Geno's getting, Geno's been pretty good. Like, I don't really disagree a whole lot with what you said about Geno. I'm with you, Brendan, and how I feel that this is a 50-50 game. But gun to my head, if I had to play it, I'd play the other side. I think it's a total toss-up.
Gun
to my head, I would take Arizona. Really don't want to play it. Yeah, let's sit this one out and stick to our four. Minnesota -3 for 25. Jacksonville +1.5 at home for 25. Baltimore giving 2.5. Our big bet of the week at 50. And then Green Bay going on the road and giving 3.5 to the Detroit Lions for $20. As well. All right, Texans played a football game. If a Texans play a football game in the forest and no one's around to see it, I just kid. Let's talk about the Texans and the Eagles. A good day for the Houston Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Houston Texans, Philadelphia Eagles. World Series wasn't the only Houston-Philadelphia game went on yesterday. The Texans moved one step closer to getting a franchise quarterback. Falling to the Eagles. Look, it was a spirited fight. I give credit to Lovie Smith for having the team ready to go. The Texans fought one of the best teams in the NFL, but at the end of the day, they did what they had to do, and they lost that football game to preserve their one win so far on the season as the Eagles move to 8-0 on the year.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a stat whore and you think that his stats were good last night, that's fine.
Mills?
Yeah.
I don't know how you could think that.
I mean, or you look at it and say, well, they scored on their first drive,
yeah,
or it was 14-14 for an extended period of time, or at halftime. That's all fine and dandy. The interception was awful. It was putrid. It was horrendous. He still looks like he's doing the same things that we keep harping on over and over again. The focus right now should be, don't burn out Dameon Pierce, because he's a stud. And don't keep – and we talked about this from early on when you found out who he really was and could be. You think you knew what he could be. Don't keep doing him an overly big workload if you can help it, because the season's going nowhere. Everybody, even the biggest Mills Mafia guy, should be under that understanding by now and realize this is a guy that has a big spot in your future if you just can preserve him a little bit. Don't beat him into the ground on a team that's not going to be good the rest of the season and hasn't been good all year.
See, those kind of thoughts are crazy in the NFL, but they're very common in other sports. Like the whole keep Damian Pierce's pitch count down is something that we've been harping on for like quite a bit. He had 27 carries yesterday, and he ran really well. I mean, Damian Pierce ran for over 5 yards per carry. The Texans as a team ran for over 5 yards per carry. So you can credit the offensive line for that. You can credit Damian Pierce for that. That was a promising, you know, spot of the game. That was a promising sign that the Houston Texans were able to run to the levels that they ran. If it's baseball and you have like a prized pitching prospect and you're for you're pitching for the Tigers, sorry, Brendan, you're not working that dude 200
right,
innings.
Right.
You're looking at 130, 140, kind of easing him in to big league exposure. You do that in the NFL, though, you're crazy. Why would you ever do that? You're not trying to do what is best in the best interest of winning the football game. So it's weird how the parallels in sports do different things. Because I agree. I think if Damian Pierce is just this bell cow workhorse all year long, and now because of the carries he racks up in year one and year two, he's not the same football player in year four. And then if you want to extend him, which is an entirely different conversation, should you be extending running backs in the NFL? That is something you have to consider. Now, if you're Lovie Smith, you're trying your best to win a football game, and you can understand why Damian Pierce is getting a lot of touches.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, too, you're looking at positives. And what I meant with the Davis Mills conversation was the box score of the week before. The week before, he had these big box score numbers, and everybody thought, hey, there's hope. There's a chance. I see people on Twitter and blue checkmark guys, at least until you have to pay for it, you know, talking about the fact that, hey, Davis Mills could be a long, long time backup in the NFL. Good for him. Good for who, if it's here or somewhere else. But I look at it and I say, Davis Mills isn't doing anything to help you win football games. And the fact that Damian Pierce is the exact reason why you need to be cautious with him, because of the fact that you don't think he's going to be a one and done. As much as you may think the running back position is a position that's a dime a dozen now, and you don't have to spend the big money or focus too much on him because you can get another one. You finally got one after what you had in the backfield last year that can play football, and he's young, and he's got a lot of quick burst as well as that strength in the way he runs and the way he will bowl people over, that you don't want to abuse the hell out of him in a year where you're going nowhere except for to the highest points of the draft, and you should preserve that at some point or yep. Get other people involved.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead, more him.
Yeah.
The Davis Mills thing, like, he showed glimpses yesterday. Like, he showed glimpses of times being pretty good. The overall body, not fantastic. And I think that the way that the Texans also, you just look at the run-pass split. You ran it 32 times in a game. You lost by a dozen. You passed it 22 times. It tells you that the Texans are trying to limit the Davis Mills exposure. They feel like they have to run the ball. It gives them the best chance to move the football because they don't really have a whole lot of belief in Davis Mills. And Davis Mills didn't have his top two targets yesterday. Brandon Cooks, who Lovie Smith said after the game, would be back with the team today. We'll see what transpires there. They were without Nico Collins. I thought it was interesting that the guy that they named captain, because Brandon Cooks is a captain, they took away his seat. They gave it to Laramie Tunsil. Laramie Tunsil was a captain for yesterday's game, which shows you kind of the turnaround he's had within the walls of that organization, where last year it's like, are you ever going to play football again in this city? You're milking a thumb injury, to now where he's been one of your best leaders, and he was a captain for yesterday's game.
Yeah, look, I mean, from a cultural standpoint, he's falling back into what you really want from a veteran within that locker room. And on the flip side, one of the things he had to answer to most after the game last night wasn't how good he played tackle for the Houston Texans. It was, would you embrace and bring back Brandon Cooks with open arms? And Brandon Cooks has come all the way full circle from being a cultural guy, a locker room guy, the kind of guy that, you know, Jack loves, that, you know, everybody should, you know, think about as being here, as being a piece, as a foundational veteran, to a guy that's now the answer to a question in terms of, will you welcome him back and how will you treat him based on what's happened? He's a distraction, and that's not what you want for this young team that's just grasping for positives at this point, trying to, you know, keep the train moving forward. I hate that it's come to this point. That's why if you do believe what you heard from Schefter and others about the Texans wanting a second and a fourth in order to get out from under Brandon Cooks, if you could get out from under that contract and you could get him out of the locker room and just give more young guys a chance, obviously you don't have a wide receiver one that could replace him. But at least you don't have to deal with the distractions that they're having to deal with now. And it was a guy that obviously, no matter what they kind of sold to the media, didn't want to be here. He didn't want to be a part of all this. He wanted to be on a different football team.
So what are you suggesting they do with him?
I mean, the rest of the year, I don't think there's anything you can do with him because you're not going to – if you wanted a second and a fourth, you're not just going to let him walk, pick, and do what he wanted, pick the team of his choice to go out to a winning situation in a positive environment that he might be able to, you know, have all the success and look back and point the finger at. He's threatening you within social media circles saying, don't push me because I will spill the beans. I'll give you the tea leaves. I'll do all these things. You don't want him to do all that.
Who cares if he does that, though? Like, spill the beans, Brandon Cooks. What are you going to say? Like, most of it you can attribute to Jack Easterby. Unless Nick Caserio's scared that he did something wrong and Lovie Smith did something wrong, who cares?
Let him talk. We don't know what it is.
I haven't seen that either.
The second and the fourth?
I saw the trade compensation, which Nick Caserio was – he outshot his coverage there. There's no way he was getting
a second
and fourth.
It was reading between the lines on some of his tweets, too, where he kind of came out and said, you know –
I mean, that was more about, like, taking him for granted than, like, spilling the beans on anything.
There was a couple I was reading his Twitter. There was a couple to me that said, you know what, at a certain point, just because you didn't get what you wanted, the baby-esque tantrum that you're basically throwing, you're not at practice now. Now you're not playing in a game situation, to me, was ridiculous. The fact that, you know, he's lashed out in the past and they've covered it up and they said he's one of their guys. To me, it's just you're making a ton of money and they went out and not only are you making a ton of money for this season, they extended you to giving you a ton more money.
Sure.
And that's a franchise you should be able to go along with. I understand you didn't want to be here. It didn't work out. The fact that you didn't play last night, to me, was ridiculous.
We said he quit on the Texans 2 weeks ago, and we were right. He quit on the Texans year long. From the whole, like, every player is a commodity, you don't really have a choice here because if you release him, you're paying him the guaranteed, and then he's going to go wherever he wants, and you get zero compensation in return, which is why the second and fourth from Caserio was ridiculous. If he wants to stay away, then I'm playing hardball with him, and I'm forcing him to come back to the – like, you better come back or we're going to void your contract.
I was gonna say, don't John Wall.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I was kind of confused with what you were saying, like that, you know, he's a distraction to the team. But they have to bring him back in. Like, they have to say, come back home, Brandon Cooks, and then you're hoping that Brandon Cooks says, no, I'm not going to do that, so you can void the guarantee. Like, the Texans don't really have a play here. You cannot play Brandon Cooks. He can be part of the 53. He's a healthy scratch each and every week. Now, if he gets ticked off with that, he can go to the NFLPA, and that could become a problem. So you kind of have to have some sort of mutual understanding there. But I'm not releasing Brandon Cooks unless he is not showing up, and I can get out of that contract. Because
I think
I can trade him in the offseason. I'm not getting a second and a fourth, but I might get a fifth or a sixth as opposed to releasing him, paying all his guarantees, and getting nothing in return.
I would basically try and play hardball with him. I would say, hey, look, man, you know what? If you want out, then let's negotiate a buyout. Get out. Let's void next year. Let's do some things so that you can write your own ticket, do the things that you said you wanted to do, but at the same point, we don't have to deal with it. Because that's my bigger point is he's becoming a bigger distraction every single day.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't need with a young locker room, with a young team, with a general manager that's trying to construct.
I just don't know if it can go away. I don't think the possibility of it going away really exists. Unless you come together with some sort of buyout, which the Texans are eating guaranteed money and they're getting no compensation, which is not a win for the Texans.
But sometimes addition by subtraction, if you can negotiate the money part of it.
The addition? Like, are they going to win more games?
No, but you get him out of the locker room where he's a distraction and he's becoming more of a problem that other people have to speak about and notice and deal with on a daily basis than if he was just the guy that was taking Davis Mills and the receivers to Oregon State and working out in the offseason or wherever else they went and trying to be a good teammate.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Justin Verlander got it. He got his World Series win. Is all forgiven with JV. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I'll tell you about the good people at Vivia. Look, I've been promoting Vivia for quite a while because it makes sense. You get to take the trash out without getting your hands dirty. You get people to do what maybe you forgot to think about when you were trying to do something positive, whether it be a renovation in your home or cleaning out the attic or the garage, or maybe you're a project manager and you're doing a lot of professional jobs and you've taken care of what you do best, but you hadn't thought about how you get rid of the trash and the extras that go along with renovations. Now you don't have to do any of that if you just go to govavia.com, because Vavia will take care of it for you. They take a 10-foot or a 10-yard or a 15-yard roll-off dumpster to your property, to wherever your project is, and they drop it off. They can drop it off in the morning, and they can even pick it up after work and take it away. They can do same day because they do five-star service for everybody, whether it be for your house and the job that you have going on there, or for people like Texas Custom Patios who use Vavia to get rid of their waste needs as they're completing their projects. We use them on our golf tournament for ESPN, and we could not be happier as well. Check them out today. Explain your needs, and they're going to make it happen for you, and they will be more than happy to make it easy for you every step of the way. Tell them you heard about it on ESPN 97.5. Just go to govavia.com. That's govavia.com.
Turn down for what?
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
This is the spot where you're trying to ditch work a little bit early, come hang out. They usually don't open up until later in the afternoon, but they opened up for us. Very nice of them to do so. Chewy's out here hanging out. Chewy's yelling at bartenders here, which, terrible look, Chewy. You can't be doing that, man. Like, spit in the drink, never get a drink again. He's yelling at bartenders.
Chewy's multitasking,
classless.
Too.
He's classless.
He's twitching. He's hassling the bartenders, yeah, while we're on the air, and he knows we're actually in a segment. He's screaming at the top of his lungs and yelling at the televisions here, and it's like, is it your show or ours, Chewy? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the direction here, man. You're like large and in charge today.
It's amazing. All that, and he still has more class than a quarter of Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. This is a great spot to come, though, on a Friday once
place.
You ditch work. Wall-to-wall TVs, the two biggest screens in the Heights, massive outdoor patio, which consists of a 250-inch screen TV. Great TV viewing tomorrow, too, by the way. Game 6 of the World Series. College football all day. And Drift is the LSU Houston headquarters. This college football season, the official LSU alumni watch party. I've seen some videos of LSU watch parties.
Yeah.
This is the spot to be. Purple gold. They're screaming neck. They're doing all of it. They also look like they had a party here yesterday for Game 5
for the
of the
World Series.
Outdoor,
yeah,
tents, some porta potties. They're still cleaning it up.
So did you see also, by the way, they have another really massive big screen TV on the side now. So there's one on the side kind of facing out towards the parking lot, one in the parking lot, all the TVs in here, these amazing garage doors that go up so that all the fresh air is coming through with a nice breeze. This place is top shelf in the way that it treats people and the way that it looks, and you're going to like the way you feel when you're in here because the eye candy's pretty good too.
Yeah, if you can deal with Chewy yelling at you, you'll love Drift. So this is the spot to be. All right, so Justin Verlander yesterday got the W. Wasn't his best start. I think he was a little shaky. I don't think he was as sharp as he's capable of being. The command really wasn't there. Walked 4-5. I think some of it was by design, especially against Harper.
The two Harpers were. Yeah.
He wasn't going to allow Bryce Harper to beat him. Gave up the solo home run to Kyle Schwarber, first batter that he faced, and didn't give up a run again. Now, he had trouble. He almost got yanked in the second inning. Bases loaded, but was able to escape that jam. Settled down a little bit. They gave him the third trip through the order, which a lot of people didn't want him to do that. Didn't want Dusty to do that with Justin Verlander. Then you get to a spot where Bryce Harper hammers a fastball down the right field line, double there, two outs. I thought that that was a spot to maybe pull Justin Verlander, but you want to give him the win. He's an out away from getting through five. Was able to do it. Had the big embrace with Dusty Baker. He wins the game. More importantly, the Astros win the game. They're up 3-2 now in the World Series. That JV had that moment yesterday. That not only he won, but the Astros won in the game that he pitched in. We've heard all of the negative things about JV since Game 1 of this World Series. Is all forgiven with Justin Verlander after last night?
I don't think let's say it's forgiven, but it's not forgotten. I think that's the way I'd look at it. I think he got the win. They got the win. So all's well that ends well. Dusty was honest enough to say that, because I was with you, I didn't know that he was going to get through the fifth inning, and I don't know that he should have. But somehow, some way, he wiggled his way off the hook and got, you know, in a position to win the game. And Dusty said, in the back of his mind, maybe that was something that he was thinking about. You know, you're not supposed to. But I think that, you know, again, it's JV. the question for me in terms of forgiven and forgotten is, it's forgiven for the time being because you're up 3-2 in the World Series with a chance to close it out. It's not forgotten because now it's going to translate at a certain point right after this World Series concludes as to how do you go forward with Justin Verlander. It's one thing, and it would be you would maybe even be a more difficult conversation than you thought it would be about the fact that if he doesn't opt out, you still got to pay him 25 and you hope he gets right. If he opts out and wants a lot more than that, now you really, that's where it's not going to be forgotten because you're going to look back and go, which JV am I getting and for how long? And then more importantly, what's caused the big drastic fall off between Cy Young 1.7 something ERA Justin Verlander and what we've seen in the playoffs, which hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been JV good or really good. So you ask yourself the question, could you forget that when you start talking about negotiations with him for the long term or for the future? And I think it's not going to be forgotten.
I think that those two things, at least from my point of view, are different conversations. They're different topics because even if Justin Verlander leaves in free agency, which by the way, we forget this. I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, what if Justin Verlander wants to be here? Okay, well, he's got a $25 million yeah. player option for next year. If Justin Verlander wants to be here, Justin Verlander can pick up that $25 million player option for next year and have nobody else be part of the conversation and the decision. It's up to Justin Verlander. If Justin Verlander wants to be here, he can do it without even talking to any other teams. If Justin Verlander tests free agency, I think it's possible he still comes back to Houston. They might even be the favorite. But it also requires Justin Verlander breaking up with you at the start. You might get back with Justin Verlander, but Justin Verlander would break up with you to go test free agency. But I do think that those two things are different topics because, like, at some point, Justin Verlander is no longer going to be a Houston Astro. Is it after the end of 2022? Is it at the end of 2026? Time will tell. But the end is also going to speak to the legacy of Justin Verlander. So if 2022 is indeed the final season that he spends in a Houston Astro uniform, yesterday was the lasting image of Justin Verlander in a Houston Astro uniform. That would be his final start as a member of the Houston Astros. And I do think that it changes the narrative completely. That all is forgiven. Everything we've said about JV in the World Series is gone because of yesterday's performance. Because if you look at the body of work with JV in Houston, 2017, he's your big deadline acquisition, pitches incredible down the stretch, pitched great in the playoffs. World Series wasn't great, didn't get a World Series win, but wasn't bad, and he was also the 2017 ALCS MVP. That accounts for something. 2019, didn't really pitch that well, you lose the World Series, understand that, wasn't around in 20, wasn't around in 21. This year, he's 1-0 in the World Series, should be 2-0 if he didn't blow game one, but he's 1-0 in the World Series, so the body of work, not regular season JV, but solid. The lasting image is a good thing, and if the Astros win one of these next two games, we have a positive note for Justin Verlander. For me, all is forgiven
and
for
I
JV.
Think for you, I think that savvy Astros fans are going to look at it and go, even the Yankees game where he struck out 11, he didn't look great doing it. I mean, he got into a groove, finally settled in, finally, but when you watched the game and you saw it unfold in front of you instead of just looking at the line score, you saw a guy that wasn't near what he had been for a good portion of his time with the Astros. So that's why when I say it's not going to be forgotten, I think even though that there's a positive out of last night, and it's a double positive, as we said, team wins, he gets that monkey off of his back, and hopefully they win a World Series. When they look back, I think people are still going to remember, hey, this dude was the horse and the big reason and the big acquisition in 17. But as it relates to what a lot of Astros fans thinks matters most, they're going to forget a ton about the regular season. They're going to focus and hyper-focus maybe, especially on the playoff run like this year, and go, yeah, he just, you know, I saw, again, I had people tweeting me and I saw people on Twitter that were saying about, you know, you get paid to pitch in the playoffs. Well, you get the position you got in the playoffs because Justin Verlander is going to win the Cy Young this year. But there's no escaping the fact that he has been less than stellar in the playoffs, especially as it relates to Justin Verlander barometer.
We also know that playoffs, it's less about the stats and it's about just winning, right? Who cares if Justin Verlander has a 4.5 ERA if his team wins the World Series? Who cares if Yordan Alvarez has been in a massive slump since the Seattle series if they go on to win the World Series? And hopefully the Astros can win one of these next two. Hopefully it's Saturday and they lock up their second world title in franchise history. If you look, and again, Justin Verlander's World Series numbers haven't been good. His playoff numbers have been good other than the World Series. The World Series numbers are the ones that weigh down the postseason numbers. But he's if this year's included, He will have appeared in three World Series for the Astros, right? 2017, 2019, 2022. Was not with the Astros last year because of the recovery from Tommy John surgery. He would have won two of three World Series. He would have wins in 17, wins in 22, and lost in 2019. So he won two World Series as a member of the Astros. While he wasn't hurt, lost one. It's a pretty good legacy. I know the World Series numbers aren't good, but he won two titles. He lost one in the three World Series he was available for.
Yeah, no. And look, again, we're analyzing a guy that's going to be go down as one of the greatest to ever pitch. But we're also trying to scratch our temple and go, what happened? Why was the World Series so disastrously bad? Why wasn't he the same kind of guy that he was when he was dominating and dealing in the regular seasons and doing some of the things like you said? I agree with you. You know, in the playoffs as a whole, he's been pretty good. But in the World Series, it's been a different story. It's just, it's part of the finances and the business part of the game that a lot of people are going to look at it with the remembrance of, at the biggest time, the money-making time, he didn't perform the way he had performed, and people are going to remember that. Because as you were talking, I was going to say, a lot of people aren't as focused on how bad Yordan has struggled since the Seattle series, for the most part, and they're just capitalizing on, he got us there. He did this in the Seattle series. But they're giving him the pass because Verlander's contract's coming up too, or could come up. They're hyper-focused even more on Justin Verlander, and they're hypercritical.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, you tell us, is all forgiven with Justin Verlander after he wins his first World Series game yesterday, a win that puts the Astros up a game in the series against the Phillies, 3-2, heading back to Houston with Game 6 tomorrow night. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. You got to call us. You got to tweet us. He's at Pac-Man Joe. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Text line is down. How important, we just mentioned Game 6 tomorrow, which this is a great spot to watch right here, Drifting the Heights. How important is it for the Astros to get it done in 6? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Drift Bar, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live, Drift in the Heights, 1207 West 20th, opened up early for us. Woolhouse will be here at 3 o'clock. Come hang out with them. Fantastic beer specials, 97.5 beer bucket special. Astros Game 6 tomorrow, this is the spot. LSU Alabama tomorrow, this is the official LSU alumni watch party. So if you're wearing the purple and gold on Saturdays, wear your purple and gold here at Drift. Every NFL game, any game that you want to watch, they have a TV here. They'll put it on for you, and it's wall-to-wall TV, so there's no shortage there. And they have massive TVs outside on the dog-friendly patio, too, by the way. 250-inch screen, two biggest screens in the Heights, perfect spot to hang out, have a good time, high tides, good vibes, good drinks, and a good spot to watch your Saturday sports. I mean, just everything you can watch tomorrow on the television screen here inside of Drift.
It's ideal. Morning, noon, and night. Just set up camp, you know, make sure you drop anchor, get ready to consume some adult beverages and watch a whole lot of sports and just go nuts on your fandomonium, because that's the beauty of a day like tomorrow when you still have World Series baseball to complement all the college football. And then, of course, leading into NFL on Sunday, it's a great weekend.
Speaking of the Astros that you alluded to, tomorrow, Game 6, Framber Valdez on the mound, Mr. Consistency for the Astros. Houston Astro fans are hoping that he'll carry over his quality start tour one more time to Minute Maid Park tomorrow. Zach Wheeler, who's been the Phillies' best pitcher, you can argue Nola a little bit. I would lean Wheeler. Now, there are some concerns about fatigue. There are some concerns about his knee. But Wheeler, on paper, the best starter for Philadelphia, went healthy this year. So, not a layup at all for the Astros. And I wanted to ask you the question. Ask this to you, Blankers. Ask it to the Hive as well. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. How important is it for the Astros to win in 6? Get it done tomorrow night at Minute Maid.
Well, it makes us look good, which would be great. But you know what? I think that the one thing that bothers me, I don't think it's hyper important. I don't think it's like essential that they win in Game 6 because they do have a Game 7. But the scenario changes with the pitching matchups. But it's also because I don't think enough people are remembering, because they just, again, it's what have you done for me lately? Well, you won game 5, so everybody's feeling really good. And now, hey, you know, we're the big dog now. We have momentum on our side. You got to come to our place and win 2 in a row. Like, that's some insurmountable challenge when you forget the fact that the Nationals did it to you in the World Series. So it's been done before, and that should be of some concern. I believe you have a pitching matchup that's in your favor tomorrow night. I don't believe in Wheeler being the Wheeler that has been the horse for the Phillies with the plus-plus fastball in and around hovering 98-plus and doing the things. I believe that when we had Michael Bourne on, you know, people had indicated, well, maybe it's his knee. Well, and then when Michael Bourne was able to elaborate on some of the fatigue issues that he went through late in the season, I don't think those go away. So to me, it's not like thinking you've got to face a Garrett Cole or you got to face somebody's ace that's on their A game. I feel like the Astros have the pitching matchup advantage as the starters go. I believe their bullpen's going to be just fine, so therefore I believe they have an advantage because, again, their bullpen has had some issues. The big blow-up in the five-run inning in Game 4 was huge. Was that Suarez? I think they kind of let
Alvarado.
Or Alvarado. Sir Anthony?
Sir Anthony Dominguez was not good yesterday.
It was not good, and no. I think they almost let him off the hook in a certain regard. So I think the bullpen favors the Astros as well. I think it would be nice to get out and send a message early to kind of deflate and demoralize the Phillies and then just pound them with all your pitching. But I need Framber Valdez to be the guy that, like you said, during the streak was basically given quality after quality and was dominant and looked like he was in control as opposed to a guy that's feeling pretty free and easy and then lets things get out of control because we know the Phillies can sit on breaking pitches and they can crush them as good as Fromber's breaking stuff can be.
Even if Wheeler is good, like I don't really expect him to go more than like 80, 85 pitches. So you could be in a spot where if you work that pitch count, which the Astros don't always do, he could go five really good innings and be done after five, where you could now turn it over to the bullpen. But as it, you answer the question, 713-780-ESPN, text line's down, you have to call or tweet us, at Pac-Man Joel, at Jeremy Branham. I don't think, tomorrow's not critical. Like, we talked about this, we both had the Astros in six. To me, the path was splitting at home is fine. Like, if they're going Nola Wheeler, splitting is fine, because I think the Astros were capable, because of the pitching matchup, even though the weather kind of favored things a little bit for Philadelphia after the fact. I felt the Astros were going to split at home, they were going to take two or three of Philly, and then they have a chance to win one with the next two. For my stress, for my health, for my head of hair not turning gray, I would like the Astros to go ahead and get it done in six.
Me too.
But in terms of like how important it is, it doesn't matter at all. You win the World Series in 2022 in six games. You win the World Series 2022 in seven games. It does not matter. Now, this Game 7 adds an element of stress because Game 6, it's a put-away game. You can't be eliminated from the series.
Right.
Game 7, your back's against the wall. You can be eliminated. So there is an element of stress. There is the element of like, okay, we lose this game. We blow another World Series after being up 3-2. So like that comes into play, but doesn't matter a ton Game 6, Game 7.
It's not a must-win for you. I mean, we know that Rob Thompson has played a lot of his games like they were almost must-wins and used his high-leverage guys earlier and done a lot of things that he's going to have to really do for certain tomorrow because there is no tomorrows if they lose Game 6. It's nice to know that you have that pad and that insurance of if you lose Game 6, you have a Game 7. But you know what? I think I'm more worried about a Rangers Suarez start than I am a Wheeler start as it relates to the Astros because there's a guy that seems to have his A game that really doesn't have a lot of high stress situations. He's got a slow heartbeat. No situation seems to be too big for a kid that's young and inexperienced, and it looks like he wants the ball and he's going to go get you and he's fearless, whereas I think Wheeler knows in his mind already he's not right. He's not 100%, and facing that Astros lineup is not ideal for a guy that feels like that. So you're in a position of strength in that the fact that you've got that pad of an extra game. I don't know about you. My stress levels have been so much higher in this series.
Game
and
five.
Last night, like, I was losing my mind as opposed to in all the other World Series and all the other situations. I've been able to just sit still and just let whatever play out. Last night, I was beside myself in so many situations going, God, don't blow this, don't do this. And I was stressing out a lot more last night.
Those last six outs, I think I lost 3 years off my life. I'm not even kidding. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line. Raymond, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Raymond? Let's go to Justin. Sorry, I misread the board. Justin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Justin?
What's going on, guys? I couldn't agree more. I think that my blood pressure dropped about 20 points as soon as the game was over last night. And I was, honestly, I'm super happy that Verlander, even if Verlander doesn't stay around, him getting that win, that's awesome. I feel good about it. And then lastly, I wanted to ask about these two things. I don't know if y'all talked about Yuli. I wanted to know if y'all knew if he was healthy enough to play this upcoming game, as well as why the heck did they bring in the infield in the first inning to, like, basically give us a free hit? I mean, that ball that Pena hit probably would not have been a base hit outside of that. I know it didn't score a run, but it seemed like, why would you bring him in so early in the game?
Yeah, thanks for the call. We did mention that earlier, that it was puzzling that they brought the infield in the first inning. And as it relates to Yuli, he was out on his own Twitter account basically saying that, you know, he's a little sore. He's not feeling great, but he feels like he's going to get therapy. He's going to be ready to play. And he thanked all the people for the support. So that's a good sign if you're an Astros fan. Because, like I said, Jeremy, we started early in the program with this. But, again, as we start overthinking things as we're watching the game, when he went down, and I wasn't aware of the knee and the ankle at the time, I just saw his head, and you could see that they were already thinking about removing him from the game, and I'm instantaneously turned to, oh God, with how many outs to get, there's going to be a ball you got to dig out at first base, something that Mancini's going to have to do. Is he going to be okay coming off the bench cold to do that? And sure enough, the Schwarber hit proved that it was going to happen, and he made one hell of a play, but it did give me even more worry and concern when that happened.
Yeah, you lose defense there. There's no argument about it. I thought it was concussion too, but I did see the knee buckle, not once, but twice, actually, on that rundown. First, he slipped to try to stay in the rundown, and then he kind of landed awkwardly and kind of twisted it. And then whenever they showed him at first base, because remember, he played the next half inning.
He
stayed in the game for a bit. He was limping on it. He was limping on it pretty good. But then when they showed him in the dugout, he had, like, his hand in his head. I was like, get him out of the dugout. He's got a concussion.
That's what I thought. Get him in the clubhouse as soon as possible, because the video and everything is – you're going to might maybe get
head.
Even if he wanted to play, that was going to be hyper-scrutinized by the league and the concussion people seeing his head in his hands.
Now, I do believe that it was the knee, because you could see if you watch the replay where the knee kind of buckled twice, and he was limping in the half inning that he played the field. So I believe that. You mentioned to the social media saying that, you know, he's going to get some rest, treatment, he's going to play. I believe he's going to play. Dusty talked about it too, and, you know, he said he's day-to-day with knee discomfort, which, you know, that can mean that he's fine tomorrow. It can mean he misses the season, like Michael Brantley. So it's a pretty wide range when they mention that discomfort word. My tell on it's that he's going to play. As far as Justin's point about the infield, I do think it was puzzling. I wouldn't have played the infield in there. Like, it's weird to do that. Like, you're playing for a low-scoring game against a pitcher who has not been good in the World Series in Justin Verlander, and that you beat up pretty good in Game 1. It's almost like that move was in reaction to the Justin Verlander that you had on the mound, like in the mound during the regular season, that won the Cy Young. And then you also, like, you don't have Nola on the mound. You don't have Wheeler on the mound. It's your bullpen day with Syndergaard starting. You're not expecting a low-scoring game.
If you think Noah Syndergaard's capable of keeping you in a pitcher's duel, then that's even more mind-boggling to me, because I can get it if it's Verlander in the regular season at the top of his game, Nola at his best when he's absolutely mowing people down, and you think this one might be whoever scores first could win this thing.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But Syndergaard already, you know, the way he came out of the gates looked like he wasn't going to be around long. He basically set the table prior to the game by saying, we don't expect him to go deep. He's not stretched out. So, and even the broadcast talking about, he's not the same Noah Syndergaard that it was when the Mets prior to the Tommy John surgery. So it was very perplexing to me that he would bring the infield in that situation. The fact that they got out of that with only one run was another really frustrating thing to me, because I think you could have had him on the ropes real quickly there in the first inning.
At the end of the first inning, though, it didn't affect it. It didn't impact the play at all. Like, does Pena get a hit there? No,
right,
but he
right,
scores
right,
Altuve.
Right.
Altuve scores on a ground ball up the middle with the infield playing back, and then Pena got thrown out on the strike him out, throw him out, double play.
Yeah, the double play
so
was
it didn't,
just crushing.
It didn't cost him. It didn't cost the Phillies. It was curious, but they would have scored one anyways. It could have been a bigger inning. But the strike
goes,
took him out of
that. To a bigger picture, how he's managed the entire series, both offensively and defensively, bringing the infield in, using his high leverage guys earlier, he's hyper focused on getting through any specific moment where there's a high leverage situation and then dealing with the consequences, where most managers would not be willing to do that early in the game.
Every Friday at 2, it's Who Said It, everybody's favorite game. Brendan will read us quotes from ESPN 97.5 personalities. The Killer Bees will give it the old college try and try to guess who said the quote, and then we'll figure out who said it. Who Said It with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.